You're listening to MLB on TuneIn Live,
the podcast.
Play ball!
Presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB on TuneIn Live. MLB on TuneIn Live airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time on TuneIn. The MLB on TuneIn Triple Play, presented by Esurance.
You and I were talking before the show, and you wanted to talk about some of the things you looked at in the first month of the season, right? Well, the Royals have been horrific. They can't hit to save their lives. The Blue Jays are right there with them. They can't hit to save their lives. And everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Their bullpen. I don't know if anybody notices this, but they have a great starting rotation, and Stroman and Sanchez aren't going anywhere, but I mean, Jay Happ, Marco Estrada. I do wonder if anybody had the prospects they could look there. As far as the Royals go with starting pitching, I'm not really blown away with their starting pitching. I think they've got
Jason
some position
Vargas.
Players.
Look at Vargas getting off to a good start.
Yeah, is he going to stay healthy? I mean, that's my big question. He's such a big question mark in that department. But you're right. I mean, his changeup has been one of the best pitches in baseball right now. But, hey, you see what's going on in this game. We're here. We're about to wrap it up. We're heading into May. When we come back, our next show will be in May. So I ask you the question then. What are some of the things that stood out to you about the first month? Maybe surprises, players, teams, guys that overachieved, underachieved?
Well, the start that the Nationals are getting off to, you know, 10 games over 500 and maybe could be, you know, 11 or 12 by the end of the month. I don't know if that's a surprise, but the start that they've gotten off to has really, you know, surprised me. I thought maybe the Mets would have done a little bit better and given them a little bit more of a run here in April. I think the Blue Jays, their start, 6-16, with that starting rotation, their offense have basically been non-existent. Batista has really struggled. They are nine games out of first place. And you know, usually you don't see that until about the end of May, about when teams at the top start separating themselves from the teams from the bottom. And right now the Orioles are separating themselves from the Toronto Blue Jays. And Toronto, to play catch-up baseball throughout the summer, is really tough. Not saying they can't do it, but it's really tough. The Giants is another one. Another team that I think I might have picked them to go to the World Series because I just like their starting rotation so well. Well, their starting rotation, besides Matt Cain, stinks right now. And then Madison Bumgarner decides to go motorbiking on a day off, and he's going to be out for, half the season. So, you know, you got your best pitcher that's never been on the DL that is supposed to lead this rotation and turn this team around, because offensively they're always going to be not great, not bad, in the middle. But it's all about their starting rotation. They answered their bullpen. Melanson's been good, besides a couple, you know, opening day. But now their rotation is done. You know, Samardzija can't put it together. Moore's been okay. Cueto, not great. Matt Cain's been the only bright spot. And then you lose your best guy. You know, that's been a big disappointment for me. And then you look at the Rockies in Arizona. The Rockies, you know, I think they got brought back to earth a little bit once they played the Nationals. 46 runs given up in four games, and that's pretty tough.
Well, I'm still buying in on the Rockies. I just because the Nationals went in there, and I mean, those guys are just all locked in at the same time. The Nationals are a runaway freight train. Now, unfortunately for them, it's not October. It's only April, so they've got to figure out a way to duplicate this when it counts. But they went in there and just steamrolled them. I still like the Rockies. I think offensively, top to bottom, their bullpen numbers are now going to be skewed because they got beaten so badly by the Nats. But that bullpen has been terrific coming out of the gate. Greg Holland has been wonderful. And then your starting pitching. Now, they've been inconsistent with Kyle Freeland, but Freeland has had some nice starts. We'll see what he does tonight in a pretty tough place to pitch as well, Arizona. But he goes one great start, one bad start. Young pitcher. Senzatella, you know, he took a loss. His first three starts have been great, and he actually didn't pitch badly against the Nationals yesterday. So Chatwood just cannot pitch in Coors Field. He had the lowest ERA on the road last year. He can't pitch at home. He always gets shelled at Coors. That's something that they're going to have to really evaluate and figure out. Tyler Anderson, John Gray should be coming back. I'm still buying in on them, okay? I'm not ready to bury the Giants. I do think it's interesting, though, that you go back to the second half of last year when they had the first half last year, they had the best record in baseball. Second half, they couldn't win a game, and they picked it up playing like that now. You know, if they had Melanson in the playoffs, I think they would have beat the Cubs, but they didn't. And now they got Melanson, and they're not winning baseball games. The Dodgers are going to be just fine. You know, they're hovering around 500. Right. I'm not worried about them. It's the Diamondbacks that I think are the interesting one. Because I do think the Rockies will be in the mix. I do think the Dodgers will be in the mix. I have a massive question mark right next to the Giants right now. So what does that leave us with the Diamondbacks? And that means that Greinke, Taijuan Walker, and Robbie Ray are going to have stay healthy for 33 starts this year. I don't like their bullpen. I love their offense. I think that's the team that probably drops back as the season goes on. And, you know, maybe play 500 ball. But, gosh, that offense is just about as devastating as it gets. What they're putting together there in Arizona, it's the starting pitching that I have questions about. Walker's been so inconsistent in his career. Does he put it together? Robbie Ross, to me, this guy is just dominating. He goes out and he just blows the baseball past guys. Robbie Ray, by the way.
Robbie Ray.
I think I said Robbie Ross. Robbie Ray, big left-hander guy, goes just, he just shoves 30 Ks, 20, I think 23 and two-thirds innings. I mean, this guy is just rocking and rolling. So they've got pieces there. Everything has to go right for them, though, to be in the mix. Everything.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not down, even though they got boat raced in a four-game series against the Nationals. I think the Rockies, I love what Bud Black has done there. They need to get John Gray back. They need him back in that rotation. Offensively, they're always going to be strong, I think, no matter where they play. Mark Reynolds filling in for Ian Desmond has been outstanding. And I love their bullpen. They got beat up a little bit by the Nationals, but I love their bullpen. With the Diamondbacks, you know, they're getting off 15-9's great start, but I just don't think they have enough to withstand the whole summer. You know, I don't like their bullpen either. Fernando Rodney, you know, he's like an earthquake. You don't know if it's going to – what he's going to do. You know, he's got six saves, but he's got 11 ERA. And Shelby Miller on the DL again. I just don't think they have enough behind Greinke, enough experience. I know Ray's doing well. Patrick Corbin's doing well. And Taijuan Walker coming over from Seattle for the Segura trade has been good, but I just don't see them competing with the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers are going to win this division. I think the Giants are done. I think without Bumgardner, he's going to be out till, what, June? July, maybe?
It's looking like, yep.
I think without him and the inconsistencies of the rest of the rotation, I don't see them bouncing back.
Wow, you are putting down the gauntlet on the Giants. The only teams that I'm sticking a fork in would be the Blue Jays right now. I think the Blue Jays, they're just Dunsky. Everything's working against them. It would literally take a miracle, and I don't believe in miracles. So that's it. Stick a fork in the Blue Jays. And I don't think the Royals got it anymore.
No.
They changed their offensive philosophy. They used to grind you out and just scrape out runs, and now they're waiting on home runs, and they're striking out more. I don't like it. I don't like what's going on right there. So I think the Royals and the Blue Jays are two teams that we'll probably see selling off at the All-Star break. Nationally,
well, the Royals have some quality players that are free agent. You look at Hosmer, Moustakas, mm-hmm. Kane. You know, they have some guys that can be moved, and they will move them. You know, they're not afraid to move them. I don't think the only guy I thought maybe they might have brought back was Hosmer, but, you know, they didn't reach any kind of agreement, so I think he's going to be gone or at least traded. You're right. I don't see the Royals doing anything. I think the Indians and the Tigers are a lot better than they are. And, you know, Kansas City getting off to a rough start. I can't see him coming back. But, you know, look at Soria, you know, Joaquin Soria. He could be moved. Kelvin Herrera maybe be moved. So they have some parts that they can go out and they can probably get some guys.
You know, there must have been something subconscious today to make me wear my 2003 World Series champion Miami Marlins shirt.
Really? If I would have known that, I would have called in sick.
Yeah, it was the Florida. Oh, yeah, that's right, 2003.
Yeah.
You were on the other side, yeah. So now you're with
I will call in sick. I'm getting the flu stuff. Right now. You're going to have to do
with
show
with the
by
Marlins. With that, come on, this thing's an extra large. I probably worn it. And the funny thing is, I may have worn it 20 times in the however many years, 14 years I've had it. My grandmother got it for me living down in Boca.
20 too many.
Yeah. And by the way, it's the Florida Marlins. Sorry yes. about that, because now they're the Miami Marlins. Finally, I get the name of the Marlins right, and it's the wrong name that they had all those years ago. So,
well, they could have a new owner. Who knows? Maybe Derek Jeter might be involved in it.
What do you think about that? You're down there. Tell me about that real quick with Jeb Bush and Derek Jeter. Yeah. They said, don't get ahead of yourself. But what's the vibe down there?
Right. When it first came out, you read that they won the rights to by the Marlins, and then everybody was excited about, oh, you know, Derek Jeter, he's, you know, you get tons of questions, what kind of owner is this guy going to be? And then you read after Rob Manfred said, yes, there's another group that's involved, so let's not put the horse in front of the cart yet, let's wait. I think this could get done very quickly, you know, maybe in the next month, maybe somebody emerges, and I hope it is Jeter and the Jeter Bush. I think what Jeter could do for this city in Miami and for this team, they have a good nucleus. I think the Marlins do. They have some really good young players. I think they need to revamp a little bit in their pitching staff, but other than that, what Jeter brings, this guy's been to the playoffs so many years. He's a Hall of Famer. He's got 5 rings, and his cliche about if we don't win the World Series, it's a disappointment. Well, it's true to him. I mean, that's the way he was brought up, and that's the way he was taught by Mr. Steinbrenner, and I think that's what he can carry over to the Marlins. And instead of, you know, 97, and all of a sudden they revamp their team, and they go on a losing streak for a while, then they win in 03, and then everybody disappears again. You know, I met Jeffrey Loria for the first time this year. He's a great man. You know, I had a great conversation with him. And, you know, he's a great business guy. You know, he buys a team for, what, $158 million and could sell it for $1.3 billion? That's not too shabby right there. But from what I see, and he's had nothing but great things to say about me, and I really enjoyed talking to him. But to have a Yankee, because Miami is a lot of transplants from New York anyway, where it's either Mets or Yankees anyway, I think it would draw. I think they would draw a little bit better. I think baseball-wise, as far as developing players, could probably become better. I think Derek Jeter would hire the right people. You know, he knows the right people that can come in there and try to revamp that organization and make them a winner again, because they do have some really good young players in that team.
Yeah, and I just think it needs a breath of fresh air. Listen, and I don't want – you're not going to say this. Plus, you work for them, but just from an outsider's point of view, the ownership down there has pissed off their fan base, at least in the way I see it, more than just about any other ownership group has in Major League Baseball. And, you know, it goes back to the stadium situation and how there may have been some confusion on how much the taxpayers would end up having to pay in the end. They're going to be paying a lot more than many people had thought they would. Then you had the Ozzie Guillen situation with Cuba, and that got everybody up in an uproar, tearing down the organization. Now, Lori only did that one time. The other time before that was after the 97 World Series, but they could probably use a breath of fresh air. I still think, you know, it's tough to draw down there. And you're right. It's Mets fans. It's Yankees fans. It's a lot of transplants. And you got to have a winner down there. I mean, you got to have a winner for anybody to show up.
Exactly. You have to draw some excitement. You have to win. You know, Mattingly came in his first year, they did revamp. When they hired Mattingly, they revamped the whole system. You know, it seemed like every single minor league coach or whatever was gone. And they tried to do a house, a clean house, and try to rebuild. They may have to do it again. You know, I don't know what kind of coaches that they have in the minor leagues, but some of the ones that I see that are in control of some of the team, maybe they need to make a little bit of an adjustment there. But they have a great nucleus. I love Don Mattingly. I love a lot of his coaches. There are good baseball people. But it is. It's a tough draw. I mean, the WBC, when the USA played the Dominican, they had 37,000 fans. It's the most that they've ever had, you know, even in a major league game, even opening day ever. You know, when they have the All-Star game, that'll be probably the most fans they'll ever have at that stadium. But you're right. When you have a place that is tough to draw, you're going to have a winner in order to bring fans out.
I mean, no one's talked about it yet, but Bryce Harper is a free agent at the end of 2018. Everybody's saying Yankees. Look at what Miami did when LeBron James went out there. All of a sudden, people were diehard Heat fans for about 4 years, weren't they? Now, who knows about the buddy situation with the new ownership, whoever it is, but you bring a winner down there. There's a whole bunch of markets like that, but particularly Miami got to get yourself.
Well, this
a winner
is going to remind you, and maybe you know, it's going to remind me a little bit of Magic Johnson out with LA. You know, I don't know the money situation as far as. You know, what will the Marlins have, the ownership have? I would doubt that they have the same amount of money or same ability to go out and sign players as the Dodgers. But with Derek Jeter and Magic Johnson, similar situations, very small percentage of ownership, but what they bring is a winner. It is a winning attitude and a sense of knowing how to win.
I was talking about the Mets. I want to get your thoughts on that. Terry Collins, every year they want to fire him. And guess what? They'll be where they need to be. It's a slow start for them. I'm not concerned. Are you?
No, not really. But I'm going to be interested to see how far this home run from Machado did. It went. There was that restaurant out in center field, the batter's eye. That went on top of it. That was a bomb. Once you find out that, I'm interested in knowing. But get back to the Mets. No, I'm not because of their starting pitching. Terry Collins had a similar press conference, maybe it was yesterday or the day before, about, you know what, we've been here before, and he referenced last year and saying, you know what, we were down, we turned things around, and, you know, they wound up, you know, having a great year and making the playoffs. But with their starting staff, I'm a little bit concerned right now with some of the ways you look at Cespedes. Yeah, maybe you should have put him on the DL before, unless you're just going about. I know players step up and say, hey, listen, I'm fine, and wound up not being fine, and now he's going to be out a while. It's going to be a lot longer than 10 days. You have some injuries that you were taking your time on, not wanting to put guys on the DL because it might have been only a couple days. That wound up costing you because of your short bench, and then the Syndergaard thing that happened yesterday. I don't know what happened as far as Dan Worthen or Terry Collins going up to Matt Harvey, whether it was the night before saying, hey, Syndergaard's feeling a little bit of something and you may have to start tomorrow. Now, Matt Harvey's going on full day's rest. It wasn't like he was coming back on short day's rest. And with, I came out and I had a big workout, I wasn't prepared to start today. I think whatever communication, whether it was a lack of it or maybe they did tell Harvey, it's an excuse. It's an excuse. You should be ready to pitch. You were on regular day's rest. You come in, you have to step up for your team. It's a, you want to be the Dark Knight or whatever for the Mets, you have to step up. I don't want to hear the excuse that I wasn't prepared to pitch. With Syndergaard, a little bit, you hear the comments today. He goes and throws on the side. Says he feels good, and then he comes out and says, well, maybe I should have pitched yesterday. Well, now you're throwing your coaching staff and everybody else under the bus because you said I had a little tired shoulder and I couldn't throw. So that needs to stop. And I'm sure Terry Collins and Dan Worthen will stop that. That you can't have that stuff on a team and when, maybe I should have pitched, and Matt Harvey, I'm not ready to pitch. But no.
Well, actually, Harvey I'm fine with, because Terry Collins actually came out and said, listen, we did the guy wrong. All right, and now maybe Harvey shouldn't have said what he said, but even Terry Collins came out in defense. Syndergaard's the one I got issue with right now.
Right.
I mean, this guy has been blowing people off. He's been having an attitude. He loves going on Twitter and doing all his funny shtick. Go out there and pitch and stop questioning everybody. Stop yelling at Jay Horowitz, the PR guy there,
right,
because you didn't want to talk to reporters. Give me a break. Get it together. Go out
That's
there
your
and
job.
Pitch. Do your job.
It's part of your job, and I don't like the idea of what he said today, because if it was, Terry Collins is a stand-up guy and he's going to take up for his players, and whatever player is going to get heat, he's going to take it. Terry Collins will eat that. Whether it's the player's fault or not, he'll take the heat for him. Whether Harvey was prepared or not, I think there probably might have been some communication there as far as maybe he, they went to him and said, you might have there might be a problem, you might have to start on tomorrow or yesterday, and maybe there wasn't. If Terry Collins is coming out and saying, it was all on him, maybe they called him on the last minute, maybe when he got there or in the morning, say, hey, we want you to start, Syndergaard can't go. I heard comments say, instead of putting Harvey in that kind of spot, maybe go a bullpen day and just start Harvey on the first game against the Nationals on tonight's game. I don't know. I've been in situations and I've been on teams where starters had to step up and the next thing they were called late and they went out and they sucked it up and they did a great job. And you don't hear anything over it. You know, there was times that they've gotten lit up and you don't hear anything over it. You know, they say, you know what, I have to do it for my team. I went out and I wasn't effective. And most of the times they're coming back on short days rest. They're not getting the 4 full days rest and starting every fifth day like Harvey had. So I can see both ways. I'm a little on the fence on the Harvey thing. I think he probably should have went out there and gave it his best shot. And I don't care about a workout or not. You know, I know pitchers and nowadays are a little bit more high maintenance and, you know, they are on their routine. But, you know, I don't know about that. I played with guys that you know, they didn't care how many days rest or what you could call them at the last minute and say, you know what, I need you to start and they're going to do it. But I agree with you with Syndergaard. You know, he needs to – the media is part of your job. Jay Horowitz is one of the best PR guys around. He's been around this game a long, long time, and he goes out of his way for many people, and especially his players as well. You know, the media is part of the job when you're talking about pitching and playing in New York or anywhere else. And for Syndergaard to come out and say, well, maybe I should have pitched, you know, that's I think that's a joke.
You're listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance. And we'll be right back with more after this. TuneIn is your home for all NFL action, now featuring No Huddle.
Cordell Stewart, he's just that versatile.
And Brian Weber.
I'm a middle-aged white guy. It's a team effort here.
You're a great guy. Excellent young man. I appreciate it.
I gave you young man
Saves for that one.
Save the tape. Excellent young man,
this
Brian
is the
Weber.
Last time I'll say it, though.
Cordell Stewart and Brian Weber will break down all things NFL.
I'm not doing truth.
You have to.
I'm telling you what
the
outcome is going to be.
That's the problem I'm having with you right
truth
now.
Truth is the name of your
because
book.
Because you know Sell what's that book wrong again. And you know what's right, you would prefer to go with what's wrong because the pundits are the ones that determine what happens.
I'm telling you what's going to happen.
No, I'm asking you.
The name of the show is not Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda.
Let's try this one.
That's our podcast.
Let me rephrase this one more time.
We're going to do that on Sunday.
Listen live Monday through Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern or catch all the replays and interviews on demand on the NFL on TuneIn.
It's like us being on our app and being able to come into your cell phones. And it's different now.
This is MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and Jeff Nelson.
Time now, my friends, for our Friday feature.
Time now for the Save of the Week, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance, insurance for the modern world.
Yep, Nelly, we got a few plays from this week. We're going to let you choose which play was the eSurance save of the week. We got Matt Carpenter saving extra innings, more in extra innings for the Cardinals, walking off with a grand slam yesterday to take out Toronto in game one of a doubleheader. Taylor Motter going into the stands to catch a final out of a game for the Mariners. Chris Coughlin doing a Superman jump over Yadier Molina for a run scored. Jose Bautista had a clutch single, giving the Blue Jays ninth inning lead. And Masahiro Tanaka saves his own game by completing the shutout against Boston. So Carpenter, Motter, Coughlin, Bautista, Tanaka, your save of the week.
I'm going with Mary Lou Renton, the Chris Coughlin dive over Molina. How about that? That could be played for years on years. That was impressive right there. I don't even know how you, when you're running to home plate, how do you just think, okay, I'm going to just jump over him? Because you see Molina, he was right in the baseline, and he was ducking down, getting ready for contact. And next thing you know, Coughlin jumps over, touches the plate with arm, shoulder, everything, and then does the good roll.
Yeah, that was all. And I remember being on the air going, oh, my God, screaming at the top of my lungs. That was awesome. Nice call, Mike Wilner, on the Blue Jays broadcast. That was the Save of the Week, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance, insurance for the modern world. Now it's time for our choice of performance, the night.
Best day ever on MLB at the Plate.
All right, let's do it. Best day ever, okay? And with the best day ever, we pick out the pitcher and the hitter that we think were better than everybody else. There's a lot of people to choose from tonight, Nelly. So let's start with our hitter. Who do you got at the plate for your best day ever?
Well, how about all the guys with two homers? There was like four guys today with two homer games. You could easily go Matt Holliday because of the walk-off, but I'm going to go with Aaron Judge. 2 for 4 with two homers. He had his ninth home run. You know, this guy just continues to do it. It's great to see. He's hitting 282, almost 300, especially after last year and all the question marks. And Joe Girardi had tons of confidence in this guy and say, hey, you know what? He's my starting right fielder. And he's proven him right. He said, thank you very much. And look what he's done, not just defensively, but also at the plate.
Yeah, I like that. I was thinking Matt Holliday too, but I'm going to go Albert Pujols. Now, obviously not his legitimate best day ever, but the guy hit his 594th right. home run.
Yep.
He's anytime he hits a home run, he's getting my best day ever. 594 moves up the all-time RBI list. He's 15th. He passed Ken Griffey Jr. Next up is Ted Williams. This guy has just had a wonderful career. Pujols, best day ever, three-run blast, and the Angels beat the Rangers tonight 6-3. All right, on the mound, best day ever.
Well, you know what? I was going to go with DeGrom because they needed a win. He had 12 Ks in the seven innings. But, you know, this isn't a quality start. But for what Miranda has done as far as coming into the Seattle rotation, picking up for Miley, you know, 5 1/3, giving up the one run against Cleveland on the road, striking out seven, only giving up the one home run. I think that's a pretty good job by the young guy.
All right. Okay. I'm going to go with a guy that probably threw the least pitches ever to get the best day ever, is all I'm going to say. You know what I'm doing, right? How about Josh Edgen coming in with one down, bottom of the ninth inning. Terry Collins pulls Familia, brings in Edgen. This probably is Edgen's best day ever. I mean, he comes in against Bryce Harper to ground into a, what was it, a 1-2-3 double play?
Right, a 1-2-3 double play.
A 1-2-3 double play to end the game. Josh Edgen wins best day ever. Congratulations on your pitch. Way to go. But hey, listen, it's all about timing sometimes.
Terry Collins, best day ever.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but you know, come on. It's he put the guy in the right position. How about that? And that's where I'm going with Josh Edgen, who threw three pitches tonight. Best day ever. Three pitches, and you did your job. And ultimately, that's really all that matters. All right, now tonight we have a special. This is actually a special look at some home runs because we had some torpedoes this evening. So let's get going on that one.
MLB on TuneIn Live Home Run Tracker.
All right, so you know you're onto something good when the first home run of the night goes 449 feet, and that was Chris Bryant. And that's not even in the general vicinity of the longest home run of the night. Jordy Mercer hit one 408. What'd you say that the balls are wound a little tighter these days?
Wound a little tighter, I think. You know, like
Jordy Mercer 408. Come on. Andrew Benintendi 385. Travis d'Arnaud off of Max Scherzer goes 455 and 112 off the bat.
Okay, so nice they're not wound tight when you're going 455 for d'Arnaud.
Hey,
he's got pop, but that kind of pop.
Max Scherzer was throwing 98. All right, yeah, so
well,
Todd Frazier.
Maybe help him out a little bit.
Todd Frazier goes 430 feet, 110 off the bat. And the next batter with the White Sox, Evesail Garcia, goes 448, 116 miles off the bat. So anything you could do, Frazier, I can do better. That's what he did. Matt Wieters of the Nats, 413, 102 off the bat. Wellington Castillo of the Orioles, 349. Albert Almora Jr. with the Cubs hit one 358 at Fenway. Robbie Cano's two-run blast, one of the more important home runs of the night, 402 feet. Yuni Escobar of the Angels, 438. Now, Travis d'Arnaud, his second home run went 420, so 35 feet shorter, but just as important, maybe even more. It was a three-run blast. Chris Davis hit a couple home runs tonight. His first one went 423 feet. His second went 395. Jose Ramirez of the Indians, 394. But the longest home run of the night, Manny Machado, 470 feet.
Yeah.
Let me repeat that. 470 feet, 114 miles off the bat, 114 miles an hour, 23 degrees. That was a blast because you were the one. I'm watching that thing go, and you go, how far did that ball go? Where did it hit? Where did it hit?
It hit. There's these two seats, and now they're media seats. They're out in center field. They have in Yankee Stadium. They have that restaurant out there where the batter's eye is, and then they have a a deck, a party deck, and they do a lot of signings, a couple concession stands right there. People can stand up and look out at the game. And then they have like two or three rows in front of that, that now it's media because they need more room for media. And it landed in those seats above that. I've never seen anybody hit one up there.
All right, then, so we got Machado at 470. Then we got Aaron Judge who hit two. His first one was 417 feet, 113 miles off the bat, which 113 miles off the bat is really, really fast. And remember, you go back, about 110 miles an hour off the bat is like 100 mile an hour pitch, if we're just going to round the numbers off. His second home run went 435 feet. That's a long blast, but the fastest ever exit velocity off a home run, 119 and a half miles an hour. Hardest exit velocity ever recorded, going back 2015, but this guy crushed that baseball. Other home runs, we had Scott Schebler, 407, Salvi Perez, Orlando Arcia, Ben Gamble, they all went deep. Trumbo hit his grand slam at 459 feet, 116 off the bat, second longest, second hardest, but accounted for the most runs. Oh, man, there were some bombs tonight. Dexter Fowler's went 390. Kevin Pillar's went 363. Pillar, by the way, is like the only Blue Jay that is hitting right now.
Yeah.
Him and Kendrys Morales. Corey Dickerson, 2 feet shy of 400. Miguel Sano also went 398 feet. Longoria's 422. Jacoby Ellsbury's 100th career home run, a grand slam that brought the Yankees back into the game, went 420 feet. Lomo, Logan Morrison, 428. Trumbo's other home run, I forgot all about this one, went 420. Ryan Braun, 414. And then Ryan Zimmerman had a pair. His first home run went 380, and his second home run went 409, 104 off the bat. Derek Norris, 373. Jed Jerko of the Cardinals, 411. And Domingo Santana, 397. Oh, my gosh, there's another page? Holy moly. Starlin Castro's game-tying shot in the bottom of the ninth, three-run blast, 404 feet. Tim Anderson, the White Sox, 410. Trevor Story hit one 428 feet for the Rockies in Arizona tonight. Brandon Moss, there's a pulse there. He hit one very hard, 111 miles an hour, went 417 for the Royals. Yuli Gurriel stays hot, 377. Joey Votto hit one 410. Pujols, home run number 594, went 436 feet and 106 miles an hour off the bat. Matt Holliday's walk-off three-run blast for the Yankees, 411. And Ryan Schimpf just crushed one, 426 feet. And now, Nelly, I really think you like this segment here. Let's look a little deeper into statistics.
Statistically speaking.
All right, so Manny Machado's fifth inning home run. Now they're saying 466. I'm still going 470. It sounds better. Longest home run in baseball this season. Second longest at the new Yankee Stadium. That's since 2009. Here's my question, though. Who hit the longest one? Was it Aaron Judge?
Who hit the longest one?
Yeah, who hit the longest home run at Yankee Stadium? I got the stat here. Who hit the longest one, though? I want the double answer.
Yeah, I don't think it wasn't a Yankee. I think it was somebody else.
All right.
I think it was. I think it was a left-handed hitter.
Okay. Well, we'll try and figure out who it is before the end of the show here.
Oh, you don't know? I thought you had it in front of
you. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm asking you. I said I want the answer.
Oh, I thought you were making me guess. I'm like, oh, man. I thought it was a visitor. It was a lefty.
Nope. Not at all. Got Abe on the case there. Tell you that much. You better be on the case. Longest home runs at Yankee Stadium. I just found a list of this, by the way. 459. Nope, that's not going to beat it. That's not going to beat it at all. 452. That's not going to beat it. A-Rod hit. No, I'm not seeing any. I'm not seeing any right now. Right now, all I can go with what I know, and what I know is that Manny Machado home run's the longest I've seen there. Jake Arrieta had a 42-pitch first inning and a 7-pitch second. All right, so Jake Arrieta threw 42 pitches in the first and then 7 in the second. His streak of pitching at least 5 innings in 72 consecutive starts ended tonight. Oh, my goodness. How about that, Nelly? His streak of pitching at least 5 innings and 72 straight starts ended tonight. That was the longest streak by a Cubs pitcher since 1913.
That's pretty impressive. You know, he gave up the 5 runs in the first inning and then nothing afterwards. You know, he did battle. He did get into some trouble after that, but he got himself out of it, made his pitches. You know, pretty impressive to go that long you know, without getting pulled or you know, hit around a little bit and to go five innings. It's pretty impressive right there.
That really is remarkable. My goodness. I'm glad. Actually, nice one on that one, Nate, putting that in there because I didn't even know it. Most career home runs with the initials MLB. All right? MLB initials.
MLB.
56. Marcus Lynn Betts. Mookie Betts, 54. Nice. He has 56. Marvin Larry Bernard has 54. So Betts has 56. Bernard has 54. MLB. Aaron Judge, 95 plate appearances, 4 home runs last year. Aaron Judge, 78 plate appearances, 9 home runs this year. His 9 homers are the most in April in Yankees history by a player 25 or younger. That's digging deep right there.
I know, cutting the swing down and you know, making a lot better contact. His pitch selection has been a lot better. He still strikes out on occasion, but not nearly what he did last year. And when he hits it, it goes.
Then we got Chris Davis with a K of the A's. 7 multi-home run games since the start of last season, 2nd most in baseball in that span. Number 1, Yasmani Tomas, the aforementioned Yasmani Tomas, who has 8. Chris Davis had a pair of home runs tonight for the A's in a loss. Ryan Zimmerman, first ever Nat with 10 homers in a month, the last player in the franchise history. This was with the Expos. Last player to hit 10 homers in a month was Vlad Guerrero with the Expos in July of 2001. Wow. Indians 12-6 when Michael Brantley plays. Indians 0-4 when Michael Brantley does not play.
Well, he didn't play today. He had a night off.
Yeah, night off. Tonight's the first time the Celtics and the Red Sox beat both Chicago teams on the same day since April 2nd, 1986. That's the day that Michael Jordan scored 63 in double OT. But I'm going to put an asterisk next to that one because the Red Sox beat the White Sox that day. Still a great stat. Albert Pujols, 30th career go-ahead home run in the 8th inning or later. He's tied with David Ortiz for the most such home runs since he debuted in 2001. Matt Holliday hit his 3rd career walk-off, 1 for the Rockies, 1 Cardinals, 1 Yankees. His first one with the Rockies 10 years ago tomorrow. And last but not least, last NL player to homer in his first bat at Fenway Park before Chris Bryant. Mike Ault in 2014, who also appeared with the Cubs. And again, the stat of the day for Chris Bryant is one engagement. His father, who was in the Red Sox organization, got engaged to his mother just behind the Green Monster long, long time ago. And then they later had Chris Bryant. So good job out of that.
I think they interviewed him tonight. They had him on the TV and they were interviewing him.
Yeah, there's just a lot of, there's so many ties there between those two franchises, which makes it
right.
even more interesting.
Well,
we got the history
team,
there, right?
Coming back, first time coming back as a Cub.
Jed Hoyer yeah. was there. We had, Anthony Rizzo was drafted by the Red Sox.
Right.
John Lackey, who's starting later in the series, he's there. It's just
quite a few. I mean, it's a nostalgic series. I don't know how much it, you know, obviously it means something. You always want to win the game, but you know, maybe it is a little preview of the 2017 World Series. I don't think so, but you know, some people do. These were the two favorites as far as odds wise from the American League and National League, according to Vegas.
Oh, by the way, Abe has dug up the fact that we were looking for.
Okay. The
Manny Machado's 5th inning home run was calculated at 470. Longest home run in baseball this season, right? 2nd longest at the new Yankee Stadium. In 2009, this left-hander, who used to play for the Mariners, who at the time was playing for the Phillies, hit one off of Chin Ming Wong. Yes, he was a visitor. Yes, he was a left-handed hitter. He also played for the Mariners. And at the time, he was playing for the Phillies. Lou Piniella always said his name hilariously.
Oh, Raul Ibanez?
That Ibanez feller.
Really? He
that
had
Ibanez
the longest
feller.
One.
Yeah. 477. Wow. 477.
Wow. Yeah.
That was my... Him and Lou Piniella saying Ibanez when I was covering the Mariners
Ibanez,
was the best
yep.
thing ever. Yeah, that Ibanez feller and Ichiro. He didn't call my Chiro. I just used to say that in my Lou Piniella voice.
Thank you for listening to MLB on TuneIn. The podcast.
podcast.
Presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. TuneIn, your everything audio app.